Just because we talk about it on Gay SA Radio doesn't mean that we promote it. Use your own judgment.
The following program is for men aged 18 and over. This program contains adult content aimed at men who have sex with men. Listener discretion is strongly advised. The Steam Room on Gay SA Radio, brought to you by the South African National Department of Health's PILOP project. Hi there, and welcome to the Steam Room. If you are a man who has sex with other men, then you are in the right place. If this subject offends you or does not interest you, well, then it's time for you to switch off. If, however, you're a guy who loves getting it on with another guy, then listen a bit closer, because in this series of programs, we talk about man-on-man sex in all its forms and how to keep healthy in the process. Okay, so, hi there, it's me again. Remember me. Okay, well, this is awkward. So perhaps it's time I reintroduce myself. My name is Max. That's right, Max, which is definitely not my real name. I mean, that's what the Steam Room is all about. This is a safe space where we all wear masks so we can talk about anything and everything. And tonight, well, tonight, it can be said that we're going deeper than ever before, so to speak. Because for the next 3 hours of the show, we're going to travel into the world of mental and sexual health. You know, all the issues that can crop up from being a guy who loves having sex with other guys, whether those issues be on the physical or psychological side of things.
Sex can absolutely be used to control people. I've seen that around me with people being in certain relationships.
It's very easy to end up in the space of being regarded as some dirty old man.
Everybody on that group just accepted and understood and loved me for who I am, not for what happened to me.
If you need help, then say, here I am, I need help, I need to connect.
I hope you're ready to get steamy with me and join us here in the Steam Room tonight as we turn up the heat and really get things going. Are you ready? Here we go. And tonight, we're exploring the world of mental and sexual health. So, first of all, even though it might seem bleedingly obvious, what do men who have sex with other men think those terms mean? How do they relate to them? So we spoke to a few people, and here's what they said. What is the link between mental and sexual health?
I think the link between mental health and sexual health is that the better you feel mentally, the better you are going to feel physically. And what I mean with that is if you perhaps do have mental health issues like low self-esteem or even depression, you might seek out sex to make yourself feel better. In many ways, I think when it comes to mental health issues and sex, if there is somebody with power issues, it can be reflected in sexual issues where a whole dominant role play might become involved, or the other way around, where somebody has too much power and they want to kind of experience being submissive, it could play out in the sexual health. And that could also then, I think, in a big way, especially with self-esteem issues, lead to promiscuity.
Absolutely. I think there is a link between sexual and mental health. I've always thought of sex being very sacred, very beautiful, very satisfying. And with that question, I just wonder that if mentally I'm not healthy and mentally I'm not there, then it might not have the desired result afterwards. So I think one needs to be at a really good space mentally and really healthy and stable for me to go in and have sex and share part of myself and a part of my soul and make it a beautiful event for myself. But yeah, I think there is definitely, most definitely, a link between sexual and mental health.
What can I say? I think the both are really, really, really relative, because me, I think that if you are not okay mentally, you cannot have like a very, very, very good sexual life, you see. So I think the link is, if people want to have a good sexual life, and I know people want to have a good sexual life, they need to be okay mentally. So the mental is very, 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 very much important for, I think it's even very important for all the field of a human being, or what you do in your life, you need to be mentally okay. So the link is very, 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 very much present between mental and sexual and sex.
Can sex be used to control people?
Sex can absolutely be used to control people. I've seen that around me with people being in certain relationships, and one of the partners might manipulate the other one for money or for a car or for lifts or for booze or whatever. So sex can definitely be used to control people.
Do I think people can use sex to manipulate or control people? Absolutely. I mean, I remember having a friend who'd stick in a really toxic relationship, who'd always be depressed, but because the sex was so good, well, in his words, his dick was bomb, and he really, really enjoyed every piece of him, he had to just stick around, and it was really not healthy. And I think people can manipulate other people through sex, and use other people and control other people's lives through sex just because they are gifted in that sector. But yeah, I do believe so. I do believe people can manipulate and control others using sex.
Of course, people are doing that every day.
Okay.
People are doing that every day. Of course, people are doing that every day. I think it's even a way for some people to have what they want. Like telling someone that maybe if you want to take some money from someone, you think after having sex with him, it will be very, very easy for you to ask him money, like, you know. But I don't think it's a good thing, but people are doing that every day. It's very much possible.
Now, when someone is in an emotionally unstable state, do they have more or less sex?
When it comes to being emotionally unstable, in an unstable emotional state, I think this can fall either two ways. If we're once again looking at somebody who, let's use our example, as somebody who's got low self-esteem, it can lead to multiple sex partners to feel good, to feel better. Perhaps somebody who wants to be accepted can get involved in sexual activities to be accepted. So there can definitely be an increase in sex. If somebody is on medication, however, like antidepressants or similar medications, it could lead to a decrease of sex life. So that one can fall either two ways of the coin.
Do I think people have more or less sex if emotionally unstable? Well, look, I think it differs, right, from person to person. Me, myself, personally, I wouldn't have sex if I'm emotionally not okay, because, as I said, I would want the desired result of feeling satisfied and feeling happy at the end. But I'm figuring if I'm emotionally not all right and I go and have sex in hopes that it will change my situation, or I have more and more sex and still my situation's not changing, then I'll just end up feeling worse. So I think I'd have less sex, if any, if I'm emotionally unstable.
I believe that people that a human being that doesn't have very good sexual life is not stable, you know. Even in a relationship, if the I know, yes, there's that thing, yes, I love you, but if you keep if you keep telling someone I love you after 6 months without having sex with the person is going to start looking at you like, is there something going wrong, you know? So I think so.
Does sex fix emotional problems?
Sex can't fix emotional problems. I think it is a short-term fix. If you are in it for a longer fix, then you need to go see a psychologist or a therapist. I mean, for that short while you are having sex with somebody, you might feel better about yourself. But afterwards, I don't think it works.
It sure as hell can try. No, I'm totally joking. I don't think so. I don't think sex can fix problems. I mean, like tequila, you have a shot, but the problems still stick the same. Sure, during sex, at the climax of sex, you feel perfect, you feel great, you feel like you're on cloud nine, but does the problems go away? I don't know. I don't think so. I honestly haven't experienced it, and I don't think it would, just simply because problems were not rooted by sex. The problems did not start from sex. So why would they end with sex? You know what I'm saying? So no, I don't think sex can fix certain problems or any problems.
I'm not I'm not okay with that one, but I think it depends on the situation. Maybe if you have some problems with your partner, some emotional problems with your partner, once you fix it verbally, you also have to fix it sexually.
Right. I think I'm gonna go with you on that one. Quite interesting. So you think that in the bedroom it has to become like the words follow the actions?
Yes, exactly. I think it very much depends on the situation. But if my mother dies, for example, and I'm crying, my mother, don't call me and tell me, Rafael, let's go and have sex so that you can forget that your mother is dead, you know. So I think it depends on what you are going through, like emotional problems, like the stress of the work. Yes, the stress of the work, a hard day, things like that. Yes, I think so. It depends on what you are going through. Yeah.
Should you refrain from sex when you're dealing with issues?
I definitely refrain from sex when I'm dealing with issues, for the main reason that, you know, you become, especially if you have multiple partners or if you are single, you become more vulnerable to things. And when I'm dealing with issues, I'd rather channel that energy into solving the issue than try and go deal with it in another way.
Personally, when I go through problems, I refrain from sex just simply because, as I said, I don't want to have sex for all the wrong reasons. And I think sex, man, is really something great that we're supposed to share with one another. But in all honesty, I'm having sex for all the wrong reasons, then it's not only fair to myself, but also to the person I'm having sex with. And me knowing that will make me feel even worse at the end of sex. So I can't refer to sex when I'm going through a lot of issues. Therefore, no, I totally refrain from sex when I'm going through my personal problems until I've sorted them out.
Personally, no. That's me now. No. Generally, when I have problems, when I have like a lot of problems, the first thing I forget about is sex. Like, that is what I was telling you. I was telling you for the first question that if you are not mentally okay, when I'm not mentally okay, I forget about sex. For a long time, I forget about sex. So, but some people, yes, they find their comfort when they have problems in sex. I know some people that tells me, you know, when I have some problem, I need to have sex. And then for a little bit moment, for a moment, I forget about all my problems. But me personally, no, the only way for me to have like a very, very, very great sexual relation is when I'm okay in my head. Yes.
So there you have it. That's the word on the street when it comes to mental and sexual health, what it is and how they think on the subject. So now I'm left wondering, what does this topic mean to you? So how about you let me know? Just drop me a message on social media with your opinions. You can always search at Gay SA Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn and get in touch that way. So you may already have your interest piqued by our topic tonight. But if there's somebody out there who feels that you may need a little bit more clarity on the subject, we're pleased that tonight we can say we're joined by someone who knows all about just how important this topic is. Welcome to the show.
Okay, so ready with your family. My name is Ethan. We're chatting to Tom Budge about mental and sexual health. Very broad question. Is there a link between mental health and sexual health?
Oh, absolutely. I think sexuality is it's very much part of who we are as human being. My metaphor for that is that we're like a three-legged stool, really. We stand on a floor of spirituality, whatever that is in the context of who we are, depending how we kind of express that, you know, through whichever religious or spiritual belief we have, that's the floor on which we stand. The three legs that form pillars of who we are as human beings, our intellect, that would be one leg, our emotions and our sexuality. And those three need to be in balance if that stool is going to be at all useful. If one leg is broken or missing, or one leg is too long or too short, that stool is just not going to work. And so we need to make sure as human beings that intellectually, emotionally, and sexually, we find that balance. And that's the link then between that mental state, who we are as beings, and the expression of our sexuality.
So then how do mental health issues manifest themselves into sexual issues? And potentially vice versa.
I suppose there are many levels to this. At some stage, we're talking about chemsex here. Those are external chemicals that we get addicted to. If there's any kind of lack of self-worth or low self-esteem, very often people can find attraction and affirmation through the connection with others, and especially sexually, because if somebody else is prepared to see you as an attractive human being and get naked and actually be intimate with you, what finer affirmation can you get about yourself to cover up that low self-esteem or the emotional inadequacies? Other than that, that's one of the biggest affirmations of all. But then it can also play into the internal chemistry, because we have our happy feel-good drugs, the dopamines and the serotonins, and it is those emotional highs sometimes that start to be chased. And if those are the only ways that we can feel good about ourselves, it can lead to obsessive sex.
So then how does one go about unpacking and treating these issues with somebody?
I think that's about balance is a horrible word because it becomes a bit of a cliche. I think we neither want to push at our sexuality, to push it away because we want to abstain from it. Sometimes in religious or spiritual context, sex is very often seen as the original sin, and it's a weakness, it's a flaw in one's character, which it certainly isn't. And so very often we're encouraged to push sex away and say it shouldn't be part of who we are. Obsessive sex, on the other hand, is a pulling at that sex. It's a neediness, and it's driven out of neediness. Balance is that sweet spot in the middle. It's somewhere between neither pushing at it nor pulling at it, but just enjoying it for what it is. I think the best word that I can find for that is continence. You know, sometimes in the elderly, bladders and bowels tend to lose continence and you have no control over them. And that's the key. If one is sexually continent, then you're using your sexuality as a part of who you are, but is neither obsessive nor is there any guilt about it.
So then someone wants to go seek help for this kind of stuff. What kind of people should they be talking to?
It depends on the kind of help. You know, mental health, there are a whole heap of people out there that can help. Therapists, a whole range of different therapies. In my practice, I use hypnosis quite a lot with a lot of effectiveness. And it's not about reprogramming a person. It's about allowing that person to find their character and their nature and the safety zone in which they can be just a human being.
So can you chat about the link between age in the LGBT community and mental and sexual health?
Oh, it's very much, it's a bit of a bell curve, I think. When, let's take a young boy, or I suppose girl, for anybody that for that matter, if you're a gay man, a gay boy, and somewhere around about puberty, you start to realize that you're attracted to men, there's the whole process of coming out. No matter how accepting the world is around you, no matter how great the Constitution is, there's an anxiety about that. And it's something that gets prolonged, it gets pushed out. And there's the anxiety and the youthfulness until such a time as you start to find those connections, and those connections are usually secret connections. And then there's the self-outing, or someone else will out you, and then your sexuality becomes public. And after that, it's almost like, well, screw it. I am who I am. I'm going to express myself for who I am. And I don't really care what other people think of me. But then the flip side is that as a person starts to age, aging is a very difficult process in the gay community, because very often it's about either material acquisition, wealth, and one's sophistication as a human being in one's material sense, or it's about how beautiful you are and what you have to offer as a person in terms of physique. But even that is a kind of a material thing too. And as a man ages, those attributes, the wealth might be there, but the physical attractiveness fizzles. And it's very easy to end up in the space of being regarded as some dirty old man. Very often I've been sitting in a pub somewhere, in a club, and just watching. I'm an observer. And you see these men sitting, and they may as well have tattooed onto their forehead the word lust or need or desperation, probably even. And they try to do whatever they can in order to find a connection, but it comes across, that desperation, that neediness comes across. And then with a little bit of unattractiveness, certainly at the physical level, those elderly men very quickly can be shunned from the community. And then it becomes a very lonely, dark place. I think there's a special thing that elderly people of all sexual persuasions need to look out for, and that is a thing called grace. It's not graceful, but it's grace. It's like style. You can't really define style. What makes a person stylish? It's hard to say. You can be in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg and you can have all the money in the world, but you can look at a person like that and you can say, "Ugh, that woman really looks kitsch." And she may be the richest woman in the suburb, but there's no style with it. It's not about the value of the things that you are wearing. It's about how you wear it. And that enigmatic word style, which is so hard to quantify, is akin to that word grace. I know of elderly people who have grace. They will never age. Their character is an amazing character. And regardless of what the body looks like, there is a pull, there is an attractiveness, a magnetism of sorts that keeps people there. And I've seen elderly men, maybe they're not having sex with the boys, but there's a cloud of young men around them who just adore that person. They find inspiration from that person. And that takes a lot of hard work. The moment you hang out the little sign of desperation, suddenly it's a different kettle of fish entirely. And what is also quite sad is that when you get to the point where you can't really help yourself, where you need assisted living for heterosexual couples, it's off to the old age home. There's the retirement village. It's all geared around couples or single bereaved people, widows and widowers. But what happens in a gay person's life? There's no old age home for gay people where they can go and feel comfortable and be in a surrounding of caregivers who understand who they are. So young boys come out of the closet. Old men go back into the closet, which is a terrible thing to do, because there's fear that if the word should get out in one of those retirement villages that this is a gay person who has had sex with another man, that they'll be as ridiculed, as taunted as they were when they were younger.
Thank you so much for speaking to me today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Just Tom Bowes talking to us about mental health and sexual health.
Sorry I made you guys sit through that. They can be a lot.
Not a problem, Elliot. I can't speak for Ed, but I love having dinner with your family.
Now, Steph, I do too. Your mom is funny as shit. And I get a look at George, so it's not all bad.
Ed, if you could stop perving on my brother, that'd be great. But I guess some things never change, hey?
It's not like you've been gone for ages. It is just 3 months. And in my experience, a nice, toned, spacey man, ooh, like your brother, takes a lot more time to wane than that.
Oh my gosh, shut up, Ed. I can't deal with that.
Sorry about it. No apology. But maybe I'll keep it on a DL. I'll whisper in steps here. Can't be so blatant about it anymore now that you're back. Now that's a triumphant sire has returned.
Oh my god.
To ease his loyalty subject from a lifetime of perpetual boredom and misery.
Stephanie, why is he speaking in tongues?
God, it's just him being himself. There's a new play down at the mosque and he can't stop speaking like it. We'll take you. I reckon we have to, seeing that we missed your 18th. Tell me your birthday at least fell on pizza day.
How do you know about pizza day?
Some things about the clinic never changes. It's an institution.
Wait, so I'm guessing you know about Jackie.
Jackie with the hair?
Yeah, oh my God, I've never seen a woman with a comb over before.
I know, right? It's
something else.
But Elliot, if we haven't said it yet, welcome back. We missed you.
Oh, yes. Welcome back, Squire. And in one piece, no less. Not to be scoofed at.
You look good.
I feel good. I've been better, though. But, you know, considering...
Yeah, but one piece. Squire.
Oh, my God. Is it gonna end? Ed, you're hogging the bed. I want to lay down. Ellie, come over here.
In a sec. Do you guys want to listen to music?
Yeah, sure. So what's the deal with school?
I'm going back in June after the break is over.
When's that?
On Wednesday. Don't look so worried. I feel ready. It's my choice. I have to get matric out of the way at some point.
Commendable.
Elliot, are you sure though? I'm sure your parents wouldn't mind.
I'm sure. The clinic teaches you what you can and can't handle, I guess.
Okay.
It's okay. Anyway, how's university going?
Yeah, nah, it's all good.
Yeah, can't complain, though it's definitely the buffet they warned you about.
Buffet of?
Everything.
It is. But luckily we're there for each other, to keep things in check.
I see.
Have you seen any of your school friends yet?
None. You're the first ones I've seen since I've been back.
Oh?
Yeah.
Don't worry too much about that. Some people get that way.
When one of their friends slit their wrists.
Yeah. When something like that happens. But it's your job to show them that you
That you
are.
Can handle it. And that you came back strong.
I'm not entirely sure I have.
You're Elliot Roberts. You couldn't have come back anything else.
Good morning. Jeez, you ready to go already?
Yeah, I woke up a little early just having a snack.
Yum. My favorite kind of breakfast, huh? Pulls.
I know, right? Though the Prozac's a bit spicy, hence the milky cereal.
Ooh, be careful. You'll stick on the killers if you keep overeating like this. You sorted for lunch and all that?
Yeah, Maria packed me one. Like it's my first day.
Kinda is, slacker. Still putting me to shame, though. I still have a few things to get done. I might wait in a little longer.
School starts soon though, eh?
I'll be quick. You know, I just gotta whip up some kind of breakfast together.
You know, you don't have to drop me off at school. I can take the bus like I usually do.
There's no need for that.
George.
No, really. No, I have plans in the city with Mel later on anyway.
Oh, yes. The new girlfriend. I still have to meet her.
She can't wait to meet you.
Not to ruin the mood, but does she know about...
About what?
You know... Me, the clinic, and all that stuff. I mean, I understand if you don't want, if you haven't told her.
Elliot.
No, I get it. It's a lot to take in. You don't want to scare her off now, do you?
Huh? Dude.
What?
Don't think of yourself like that. You're not a liability. What happened, happened. I'm your brother, man.
Okay? I know.
I'm not ashamed of you.
I know. It's just,
You need to trust that I'm gonna be your brother through all this shit, okay? I'm not going anywhere, okay? I told her, and she's really cool with it. I mean, not cool with it. You know, she understands it. I mean, if she didn't, I wouldn't still be dating her.
Right? Okay. Thanks. No, thanks for that.
No problem, man. Just like it's not a problem to drop you off today, might as well make it as comfortable as possible. The bus is a drag.
That it is.
But Ellie, speaking of, I heard what time you came back last night. Again.
Oh, fuck. I'm sorry, did I...
No, chill out. Mom and Dad didn't hear anything. I'm just worried, that's all. Where did you go?
Just for a walk.
At 3 a.m., Ellie.
I just needed some air. I'm sorry if I woke you, eh?
No, it's okay. I was up anyway. I just wanted to make sure that everything is fine.
Yeah, no, it is. Don't stress. Guess I just needed it. Today's a big day. First day back at the big dollar.
Yeah, it is. And you're doing great.
Thanks.
No, really. Okay, let's hit the road. Shit. I think I got you a bit late.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no one's in the quad.
I'm sorry, dude. You know, traffic and all. Why are you looking at me like that?
George.
Okay, so maybe I thought you could do without the crowd.
I'm okay, George. I promise. Mm-hmm. But thanks.
No problem.
Okay.
All good?
Yeah, just gathering myself.
Take your time.
Yeah, okay.
You'll be okay.
I will.
If you need me to pick you up later again, I will. It's no problem.
That's okay. I'll handle getting home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Go show them what you're made of, man.
Okay.
That was Homecoming, written by Arlen Banton. It featured Kevin Narane as Elliot, with Antoinette Modise as Steph, Christmas Mokone as Ed, and Dylan Park as George. Final production was done by Ethan Baird, and the play was directed by Hendrik Baird. This play was produced as part of The Steam Room, which is brought to you by the South African National Department of Health's PILA project. Gay SA Radio, where you are family. Stay streaming. The Steam Room will be right back. My name is Max, and you're listening to The Steam Room here on Gay SA Radio, where you are family. The Steam Room is brought to you by the South African National Department of Health's PILA project. So, seeing as tonight we're talking about mental and sexual health, I thought we should take to the streets to find out what men who deal with these issues have to say. Do you use sex to feel better about yourself?
I can't use sex to feel better about myself. I don't use sex to feel better about myself. But back then, I used to use sex trying to feel better about myself, because just those temporary pleasures made me believe that my problems are gone. But then growing up, I realized that the only thing that can remove my problems is internally. And it was not okay. I just ended up feeling worse than I did.
I've never used sex to feel better about myself. Not that I can remember.
Have you ever had sex and felt bad afterwards?
Yeah, I think it was when I realized for the first time that sex actually does not fix problems. And yeah, I felt really, really terrible, because it was building up. I was going and having sex. I was going around having sex. It was really, really, I was really young, so it was building up. And towards a point where after this one incident where I was done having sex, I really felt terrible. I had like a shutdown, and I was referred to therapy, and only after did I realize what I was doing to myself and to the persons that I was having sex with, that it was really, really not cool. And yeah, I really felt bad, and I felt really terrible inside. So yeah, that was my experience of when I felt bad after having sex.
I've had occasions where I've had sex with people and I felt bad afterwards, especially when I was younger. I mean, when you are in your early 20s or late teens, you do tend to grab an opportunity when it presents yourself, and nobody really wants to be branded as a slut. So I think if you do feel like a slut afterwards, you do get sometimes deal with guilt feelings there. And I've gone through that, and I think quite way down the line, I've dealt with it, and no, not anymore.
Have you used sex to escape the present?
I think I've shared a lot about my history and when I did not know better, and that I thought sex would fix everything, and that was only simply because I was going through the most and I didn't have anyone tell me, hey, listen, this is not what the way to go. But instead it would be, hey, let's go for drinks, and you'd meet guys at the bar and guys would invite you over, and you'd say, well, my life generally right now is such crap. Let me just go ahead and have sex with this guy. Maybe things will be hunky-dory. And temporarily, it would be. I mean, it, like I said, those temporary pleasures and those temporary moments when you climax and you feel like everything is perfect. But I think after I realized that that's the case, no. I don't use sex anymore to escape my current situations. Instead, I'd rather talk to someone. So, yeah.
I've never used sex to escape the present. I think rather you in that moment embrace the present than trying to escape it. So I've never used it as an escape tool.
Does sex have an emotional bearing over you?
Does sex have any emotional bearing? Yeah, like good bearing now, especially if it's with someone you are totally into and you're a good place in your life and your heart is just beaming with love. And afterwards, you're just like, you know what, I can't wait to do that again with that person, just because you really, really feel great about yourself. And you know that you're not going into it with baggage and you are mentally just sound and sane. So I think I can safely and confidently say that sex has an amazing, great bearing over me emotionally.
Sex doesn't really have an emotional bearing over me. Or once again, I think you need to kind of look at a balance there. And it took me a very long time to have a balance between sex and making love, and I am in a stable relationship with somebody I love very much. So I think there's a big balance there, so no.
Can we find a balance between mental and sexual health?
Basically, it's making sure that you are not having sex for the wrong reasons and making sure that mentally you are sound. And if you are not, then it does not mean it's the end of the world. Find help. Go online. Speak to professionals. Seek help. Listen to Gay SA Radio. You know what I'm saying? And just see how you can sort things out for yourself before going out and having sex with someone else. So I think there is great solutions into finding balance between mental and sexual health.
You can find a balance between mental and sexual health. I mean, and that journey is going to vary from person to person. I don't think anybody's journey to get to that point would be the same. But definitely is a balance. And I think in my relationship, I have achieved that. And it's hard work and it's a constant thing that needs to be tended to. Otherwise, I think that balance can very easily tip out of balance.
It's always so great to hear straight from the horse's mouth, don't you think? I mean, one thing that really surprises me is just how often I can relate to the answers here. If that's the case for you, I hope you're starting to feel like family. If not, well, then keep listening. Getting all this nitty-gritty to you is what Gay SA Radio is here for. It's always better to know exactly where you're at with your sexual health and how to keep yourself in the clear. To help make that process a whole lot easier, Gay SA Radio is here to lend a helping hand. So, in the studio with us, we have a professional to answer a few questions. Welcome to the Steam Room.
Gay SA Radio, where you are family. This is Ray, and today we are joined by Pierre Bruard from Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender to chat to us about mental and sexual health. Do you think there is a link between mental and sexual health?
Definitely. I mean, I think first of all, anybody who grew up as gay or lesbian or trans, for example, would have likely experienced some form of discrimination and negative attitudes towards their sexual orientation or gender identity. And that can definitely contribute to long-standing low self-esteem, feelings of isolation, alienation, and can contribute to depression and anxiety. So anybody who's suffering from depression and anxiety can, in fact, end up having a problematic sex life. So if you're depressed, for example, you may not be able to function well sexually. You may feel undesirable. You may be less likely to protect yourself in a sexual encounter because you have a low sense of self-worth. An anxious person might struggle to perform sexually. But I think there's also kind of a reverse relationship, because if you're having a really good sex life, which is affirming and mutual and satisfying, that in itself contributes to mental well-being. So there's a very powerful link, I would say, between mental and sexual health.
And also, how does one go about treating these mental or sexual issues?
Well, there isn't a simple and neat answer to that question, because you can imagine if, you know, you're a 40-year-old gay man, and for most of your life you've been told that you are unworthy or second-class citizen, to undo those years of negative conditioning is not a simple process.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, first of all, individual psychotherapy is one way in which someone can start to unpack all those negative messaging that one has received and to do something about it. Support groups or I suppose medication is a factor. You know, if you have severe forms of depression and anxiety, then seeing a psychiatrist or a GP whose understanding of mental health issues can be helpful. But I also think if you have positive and affirming relationships, you know, I don't necessarily only mean sexual relationships, although that's important, but if you have friends, a family, a sense of community where you feel connected, where you feel affirmed, where you feel people like you and accept you for who you are, in a sense, that's a form of treatment, to be surrounded by people who really appreciate and value you for who you are unconditionally. I think those are some of the sort of immediate suggestions I would make to somebody. It's not easy. You know, we live in a fast-paced world, and I think the social media space can be quite negative. And even if you think about people who use dating or hookup apps, those can be quite brutal sometimes. You know, so I would if you're finding that those are having a negative impact on your life, I would look for other ways to find forms of affirmation.
All right. And I think from everything you just unpacked for us in terms of mental or sexual health, can you confidently say that people can find actually a good balance between mental and sexual health?
Well, I think balance is always going to be dependent on what's going on in your life at the moment. I don't think anybody can say, I know I can't, that I've achieved a perfect balance in all aspects of my life, confidently going forward, that I'm never going to be unsettled by something. You know, something can happen in your life where you have, you know, a relationship can break down, or somebody that you're very close to passes away, or you find that you're not happy in your job, or you get a physical illness. All of those can affect your wellness and your well-being. And so it's not only about, I think, balance, which I think is achievable from time to time, but also whether you've got resilience in being able to rise up from adversity and getting help from people who care about you and support you to get you through a particular moment of crisis. And then you might find that you're feeling good and balanced for a while, but then a new crisis can emerge. So I think balance, finding balance is an ongoing life strategy.
Thank you so much, Pierre. That was, of course, Pierre Bruard from Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender, chatting to us about mental and sexual health. My name is Ray, and this is Gay SA Radio, where you are family.
Now, that was an insider's info on how to keep yourself safe and anxiety-free. I'm Max, and you're listening to The Steam Room here on Gay SA Radio, where you are family. I've invited an expert to quickly tell us about alternative mental health therapy.
Gay SA Radio, where you are family. This is Ray, and today we chat to Peter Furstenberg about LEGO serious play methodology, as well as playful men. Welcome, Peter. What is Playful Men all about?
All right. So Playful Men is a workshop which has been put together using the LEGO Serious Play methodology. Before minds go all over the place, you know, we sort of, we reel it back. So it really plays with the fun concept of getting back to childhood and just playing with LEGO and just playing with, you know, having a bit of fun with whatever whatever the topics are. So we tackle quite serious topics within the workshop and just get a broad sense of what everybody's opinion are about those topics. You know, so we would I'd pose a question to the group. They would go back and then build what they think their idea is. And then we would discuss those ideas and we would discuss and see, you know, what we have in common, what's the differences. And you really get a sense of, you know, all men are really the same. All men think the same. All men have exactly the same mindset at the end of the day. And I think this highlights it in such a phenomenal way where you can visually see, you know, what the similarities are and you can visually see what the differences are and what makes us unique ultimately.
And why did you feel the need to have something that caters only for men instead of women too?
This could just as easily be moved into the female realm. There's certainly no one stopping you're doing that. And we might actually do that in the long run. But men specifically, through another series of workshops which I've been involved in over the years, one of the big issues that come to the forefront is that men don't talk. Men just don't talk about their issues. They don't talk about their problems. They don't talk about just about anything. You know, they just keep everything so deep inside that they don't share. So the whole reason for the workshop is to get men to just talk and just share and just realize, hang on, you know what, we're all in this together. Mm. You know, we've got some real issues that we need to face and solve. And by just talking about it, it's the first starting point to get these things resolved ultimately.
Yeah. And would you consider this therapy method unconventional? And if you can just delve a little bit into how and why you'd say that.
It's probably a little bit unconventional. Mm-hmm. It really taps into the playful nature of people. Mm-hmm. The fact that we love playing, we love having fun. And through harnessing that power of fun, you can turn it into purposeful play that would then make it, you can bring what's in the mind in a very tangible 3D way. You can see it in real life. You can touch it. You can feel it. You can talk about it. You can point to things. Mm. So it makes concepts that's a lot of times difficult to express. It makes it easy to express and it puts it on the table and give you a point of reference, which is amazing. And, you know, in terms of the application for this sort of stuff, I mean, there's a lot of companies that use this. I mean, all the big boys have used it at some stage. I mean, Lego themselves have used it. I mean, that's the whole way it was born in the first place. You know, they had this belief that you don't need an external you don't need someone from externally to actually come and tell you what the problems within the company is. You can do it from within. You can harness the power of the company themselves and build and leverage that. If you give it a voice, then you can actually talk about it, and you can actually come up with amazing solutions from within an organization, from within yourself. And that's the real power of this, the fact that we all have an answer. We all have our own opinions and we can all bring it to life by simply just airing it and giving it a voice. So, many big companies have used this to solve some very complicated problems.
Is there a secret on what it does differently as opposed to sitting down? And what is that secret in the success of Lego serious play methodology?
The secret? I don't think there's a real secret. I think if you have to attach a secret to it, I think it's the whole idea of bringing play back, is getting back into basic human nature where we all want to play, we all want to have fun. And by simply doing that, you start unlocking so much ideas and potential. Because if you're in that state of flow where you're having fun, you can bring magic to the foreground. Yeah. You know, you can really solve big issues if you put it into practice.
All right. And before I let you go, is there anything else about your workshops or the therapy method that you'd like us to chat about or you'd like to share with us that we haven't touched on?
In terms of the workshops, we don't do many of them. There's only four of them remaining this year. So the groups aren't very big. So if you are interested, you know, get in touch and we can certainly point you in the right direction. And then sign up and come and have a day of fun and just see what you can discover.
And for more of that information and the dates of the four remaining on the workshops and where people can contact you, how can they go about finding this?
All right. We do have a website. It's called playfulmen.co.za. So if you go onto the website, you'll find all the information about the workshops and you can also find all the dates the various workshops will take place.
All right. Thank you so much. This is Ray and I was chatting to Peter Furstenberg about LEGO Serious Play methodology as well as Playful Men. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So there you have it. Remember, if you need more information, go check out the Gay SA Radio website, gaysaradio.co.za. And if you want to chat with me, you can always send me an email. You can send it to info@gaysaradio.co.za. This is Gay SA Radio, where you are family. I'm Max, and this is The Steam Room. And on today's show, we're chatting about mental and sexual health. And up next is quite an in-depth interview on the matter.
Please be advised that this content contains explicit descriptions of rape and violence. Sensitive listeners are advised to use their discretion. Gay SA Radio, you are family. I'm Rion and I'm talking to Garrick about a life-shattering event that happened to him about 6 years ago in Cape Town. What was meant to be a fun night out turned into anyone's worst nightmare. While visiting a gay club in the city, someone spiked his drink. A violent gang rape followed. Sharp objects were inserted into his rectum, and he was left naked on the streets for dead. He was also diagnosed with HIV after the incident. Coming to terms with what happened, Garrick shared some of his stories with us.
Mentally and psychologically, how did you get through this? I mean, it's obviously been a very dark and difficult time. And I mean, from getting out of the hospital and hearing you're out HIV positive and going into this absolute self-destruct mode up to where you are now, how did you manage? How did you cope?
Do they know about Dex Incorporated?
Yes.
Because that is a very, very large part of me being where I am today.
So just for people who have missed what Dex Incorporated is, it's a WhatsApp group that a whole bunch of us belong to. And it's more of a support kind of system than anything else at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's not really a hookup group at all. It's a big gay family, and we really, really are like that. Anyway, how I could get through this was by telling as many people that were willing to listen about what happened.
And this is on Dex Incorporated as well.
Yeah, on Dex Incorporated as well. There is a level of shit that comes with that too, because you're by telling people this, you're automatically asking people to judge you. And I'm not fazed by that. That's another coping mechanism that I found is, as soon as I was off the drugs and I had a clear mind, I found a way to forgive myself. I forgave myself first. I will never forgive those people. I don't know who they are. But you have to forgive yourself. It's the first step, actually, in fixing all of this. And then speak about it. Don't keep it in, because you will destroy yourself. You'll totally destroy yourself. And that is the only way that I've coped, was by telling my story to anybody that would listen. And yeah, then I got introduced to this group, Dex Incorporated, and everybody on that group just accepted and understood and loved me for who I am, not for what happened to me. And if anybody can find that in a situation like this, I think you're going to be okay.
You mentioned that people judge scenarios like this. Why is it a natural human thing? Why do you think, and how did you handle that?
From people very close to me and people that are not close to me, I've had many people say, but this is on you. You went to the gay club. And in a way, yes, yeah, that is. It's that kind of judgment. Why did you destroy yourself with drugs like this?
that kind of judgment. I think what people don't understand, they judge on. And we're all like that. Everyone, I'm like that. Somebody tells me a story and I don't know so much about it, I'm going to think, you know. So, anyway, this group of people really, and my family, I've got a very supportive family. I've actually had a very supportive family through all of this. I mean, from coming out of the closet, I was very lucky like that. So I wish everybody had the family that I had. Not just in this situation, in all situations. That helped me cope.
I think rape in general is a very difficult thing to cope with for anybody. Do you think it's more difficult for men if you as a male were kind of got raped? Do you think it's more difficult for a man to deal with that?
Absolutely. Across the board, across all sexualities, I think it's very difficult because it's within us to feel that we are men and we can defend ourselves. And rape doesn't happen to men. I'm saying this in air quotes. Men don't get raped. And yeah, it's very difficult to deal with because you feel that your masculinity was taken away from you, your defenses were taken away from you, and society dictates that we can't speak, we can't say that this has happened to us. And I think only recently has rape been classed as a criminal offense towards a man. Before that, it was indecent assault. So we were also shut up about it, basically. So yeah, it's very difficult to deal with.
If you could say anything to the people who did that, what would you say to them?
It's probably the wrong time to ask me that, but I would say, look what you did. Look what you did. And you didn't need to do that. I would like to say to them, I forgive you, but I won't be able to get to that point. And I would like to say, please don't do it to anybody else.
If you're going to give advice to anybody that gets in a similar situation.
Across the board, I would say at the very beginning, when you realize something's happening to you, find somebody and cling on to that person, somebody that you can just make sure that you're going to be okay. Getting through it, talk about it. Go to counseling, go to therapy, but talk about it. Get it off your chest, off your shoulders. And if you develop a relationship with somebody you can talk to, you can also speak to them about wanting to self-destruct when that feeling comes, because that feeling will come. And they can get you away from that. And don't feel that this was on you. That is the biggest advice that I can give you. This is not your fault. It's not your fault. Somebody else exercised power over you. You didn't ask for it. It's my advice.
Okay, so ready with your family. I'm Rion, and that was Garrick.
Wow, that was indeed an eye-opening chat. Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family. We're joined by yet another expert on the matter. Join me in welcoming the expert who's no stranger to the steam room. Thanks, Bruce, for letting us hang out once again.
This is Gay SA Radio, where you are family. I go by the name of Ray, and today we chat to Bruce Little from Anova Health Institute, chatting to us about mental and sexual health.
Do you think there is a link between mental and sexual health?
I personally believe that there is a link between mental and sexual health. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert in the field. But from my personal experience, I believe that mental health is connected to a good sense of self, feelings of self-worth, a feeling of connectedness to other people, to your community, to your friends and your family. And if there isn't a good connection between yourself and your community, and if there's a feeling of isolation or alienation, then that results in a possible connection to mental issues, you know, so things like trauma caused by maybe being thrown out of the house because you're gay by your family, or maybe being cut off by the church or the community that you live in because they have an issue with your homosexuality or being queer or whatever your identity may be that they consider to be other. All of those things are quite traumatizing. They can leave you feeling depressed, feeling isolated and alienated. And those things can have long-term effects. And what happens is when somebody feels, in my experience, in my observation, I've noticed that when there is a feeling of alienation and isolation, then it can cause a desire and can also result in desperation. And that desperation and that depression makes an individual more likely to engage in risky sexual acts. And that statistically, it has been proven that men who are depressed, men who are have low feelings of self-worth and who do feel disconnected and alienated, there has been a direct correlation with risky sexual behavior. They are less inclined to use condoms during sex. They are less inclined to make healthy sexual decisions. You know, they are more inclined to make use of substance abuse, so heavy use of alcohol, drug abuse, and drug use. And drug use and alcohol abuse is also linked to risky sexual behavior. So when you drink or too much to excess, and or you're engaging in the use of drugs, then your inhibitions are severely compromised, and as a result you just don't care. You're like, oh, who cares? I don't care about tomorrow. I don't care about myself. I don't care about this person. So who cares if I use a condom or not? Like, it doesn't matter. And that's the problem. You're less likely to take care of yourself. And that's a problem.
I think you just shared with us how mental health issues can manifest as a sexual intimacy issue too. But how does one go about treating these mental or sexual issues?
It's a very difficult question to answer because at the end of the day, the individual has to take responsibility for their own well-being. You can't just roam the streets and pluck people off the streets and then say, you know, and force them to engage in certain projects or therapies that are going to help them with their mental health. So the first thing that needs to happen is that individuals have to acknowledge to themselves that things are not right, that they don't feel good about themselves. So I, as an individual, have to take responsibility for my own mental health. I have to take care of myself. I have to recognize the fact that I feel isolated, that I'm depressed, I'm behaving in a way that is have my own best interests at heart. And then I need to take the necessary action. So I need to reach out. So, and that has many different phases. So what I can do is I can phone the toll-free line for the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAG. I can find other ways. I can join associations or like the Mankind Project and form connections with other men that will help me to be a better man, brother, father, lover. And then also to just reach out to my community and say to friends and family, if you need help, then say, here I am. I need help. I need to connect and try and also not to, you know, try and think in the long term. And the problem is that we live in a society nowadays where the focus is on instant gratification. So I'm feeling lonely now. I'm going to find somebody now and have sex with them now. And that's a short-term solution to a long-term problem. And, you know, the thing is, you might find somebody in the next 15 to 20 minutes to have sex with, but that's not a long-term solution to the loneliness and the emptiness that you feel. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with meeting up with somebody and having sex with them. That's awesome. Sex is fabulous. It's a fantastic way to engage with another human being. But what I am saying is that if you're using sex as a crutch, if you find that the way you're engaging with other people sexually is not healthy for you, if you don't, if you have sex like this and you don't end up feeling good about yourself afterwards, then there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. Then you're not using it correctly. you know, and then that's, it's tied into things like sexual addiction or substance abuse, all of these things. They're detrimental to your health in the long term. The sex that you're having should be sex that reinforces the good things about you, the way you feel about yourself. The intimacy that you're having with others should be reinforcing the good things that you believe about yourself. You know, if you find yourself feeling really crap about the sex that you're having or the things that you're doing, then you're on the road to struggling with your own mental health. Whereas if you are doing things today that are going to improve your tomorrows, then you're on the road to mental well-being.
All right, Bruce, now on everything you just touched on, and also after an individual makes that decision for themselves, would you confidently say that people can find a good balance with mental and their sexual health?
I think it's up to the individual. It also depends on what the individual is struggling with. You know, mental health is a challenging concept because there is mental illness as well. So certain individuals are suffering from mental illness and they haven't been diagnosed, they haven't sought medical attention. And for some people, this is not the case for everyone, but some people do need to seek medical attention or see a psychiatrist or see a therapist. And some people do need to be on medication to help them maintain a good mental lifestyle. So it's complex, but you know, if you don't feel that if you haven't been diagnosed as having a clinical depression or bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or whatever the case may be, then there are basic steps that you can take. You know, just make sure that you do things that are going to look after you in the long term. So avoid toxic relationships, avoid toxic relationships with substances. You know, if you find that every weekend you're going out, you're drinking to excess, you're taking drugs, you're having sex with people that you don't really connect with, you're having sex but you're not finding any intimacy or connection with other people, then it doesn't take a genius to figure out that in the long term, you're not going to be feeling very good about yourself. So we are a collection of the choices we make every day. And if you're choosing every day to do things that are not going to look after you or make you feel good, then the end result is that you're not going to feel good. You're not going to be mentally healthy. So it's, you know, choose every day to do things that are for your own best interest. And then you'll reap the benefits of feeling good about yourself.
Thank you, Bruce. That was Bruce Little from Anova Health Institute chatting to us about mental and sexual health. I am Ray, and this is Gay SA Radio, where you are family.
Well, I hope you found that segment informative and helpful as a life vest to help keep your head above water. Thank you again for joining us. This is The Steam Room on Gay SA Radio, where you are family. Now, after a show like today's one, a very important one I might add, you might be left wondering where to finally get the help that you may need. If that's the case, our next segment here is sure to help you to do just that and get on the right track.
Gay SA Radio, where you are family. I am Ray, and today I'm happy to be joined by Pierre Brouard from Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender to tell us where you can get help. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about everything you do.
Thank you. I'm the Deputy Director of the Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender at the University of Pretoria. And I'm a clinical psychologist by training. And mostly over the last 30 years or so, I've worked in the HIV field, which of course means that I've been doing work around sex and sexualities as well.
Okay. And please tell us more about Center for Sexuality, AIDS and Gender and the history of the organization.
It's been going for about 20 years or so. And we see our main role is helping the University of Pretoria to manage and understand HIV as it relates to the university as an employer, but also as an institution that is shaping the lives of young people. So we're interested in academic work, theory and research making and teaching, but also in engaging with what it means for real people's lives on the ground. Mm. And probably one of the most exciting and interesting things that we've done over the years is to offer a student leadership training program where we engage them with lessons and discussions around sexualities, AIDS, and gender, and then encourage them to take up activities to mobilize for change. Part of that is just having more open-minded conversations about sex, about gender, gender identity, gender relations, and to be more free, I suppose, to talk about things that really matter to young people.
Mm-hmm. Who is the center open to? Is it open to everybody at public, or is it just the university?
Right. So most of our work is aimed at the university. We, as I said, we do a lot of work with students, with staff, and then we do advocacy work on the campus as well, trying to make it more inclusive for, I suppose, all kinds of people, people with HIV, people with disabilities, but also for queer persons. Mm-hmm. So our main focus is the university community, but we have also engaged in community projects, and some of our youth work links us with universities in the Southern African region. Yeah. So our brief extends our work beyond our borders as well. We're not generally open to the public for a sort of a walk-in service. So we do HIV testing, for example, for students. But because of our funding, our limited funding resources, we do focus our energies in that regard on the university and student community.
Okay. And have you partnered with anyone else to strengthen the objective of Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender?
We definitely have worked with multiple partners over the years. That sounds a bit dodgy, doesn't it, thinking about sexuality? But multiple partners in our sense is, you know, first of all, we have partners on the university campus. So the Center for Human Rights is an obvious partner. With them, we've run a number of HIV projects over the years, and with them, we do quite a bit of work around sexualities and gender, because they have a specific unit looking at the rights of LGBTI people. But we also work with other NGOs in the field. We've worked with government, with UN agencies, and international donors as well. So we definitely see our work as collaborative.
Okay, and I've heard you mention one of the innovations that you have launched. Please tell us, under Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender, is there any other innovations that you have implemented to further help people?
Well, you know, beyond our student leadership program, which I think has been incredibly successful in developing a generation of young people committed to social justice, we've also started a small project, but I think it's quite exciting. We're calling it the Queer Space Collective. And it's an initiative to promote inclusivity of queer persons and bodies and expressions at the University of Pretoria. We're hoping to have, in early 2019, a Pride Literary Festival, for example. So we see that as an initiative which is opening up the university to other voices, other expressions, and challenging, I suppose, heteronormativity and dominant ways of being.
Yeah. All right. And for people who wish to contact the Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender, how can they go about doing this?
Well, they could contact us by telephone. Through by calling 012-420-4391. And then we also have a website, which is www.csagup.org. Sorry, I got that wrong the first time around.
It's okay. Thank you so much for sharing with us where people can get help. That, of course, was Pierre Bruand from Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender. I am Ray, and this is Gay SA Radio, where you are family.
And that's all from us here on The Steam Room on Gay SA Radio. Thanks once again for listening and getting up close and personal with me, Max, as we enjoy yet another thrilling night of open and honest talk about the ins and outs of all things connected to man-on-man sex. And in our next show, we'll, as usual, be bringing you interviews, info segments, and dramatic content as we undo the covers and climb into a talk about sex clubs, our next topic. Thanks for streaming. I'm Max. Yes, I'm still sticking to that old story. I'm Max, and this has been The Steam Room on Gay SA Radio, where you are family.